everyone. This is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar, hanging out today with Dan Johnson, who is a guitar tech for Dan Auerbach, obviously with Black Keys. How are you doing today, Dan?
Good, thanks.
So, obviously, he's the best dressed tech we've ever seen in any of our rig rundowns, so that award goes hands down to Dan. So,
thank you.
I'll let you, the class man, take us through what we see here, the amps.
Okay, so we have three amps that are on all the time, and they're split inside my rack here. All my pedals are in this rack with the RJM loop effect gizmo. So they're split back there, but they're all on all the time. This one goes through a tape delay, and this one has some reverb, and that one is just dry. So
what dictates what pedals are going through? Like, how did you guys decide, you know, putting the delay through the Marshall and whatnot?
Well, because the bass sound with no effects is just straight amp, pretty much, except for this has the tape delay on it. It just gives it some, you know, fullness to and differentiates the tone between them. The pedals, though, they all go into all amps.
Okay.
Whenever, like, a fuzz comes on, everything's fuzzy, or the boost.
Three different amps, how are you setting them, I guess, tonally? Like, I imagine you're getting a lot of your dirt and overdrive from the amp, and these two are kind of set up clean?
All dirty.
Oh, all right.
They're all pretty dirty. This one's, you know, got a browner sound, and this is a little more Fender, spiky, trebly. You know, it's traditional, got a little more chime to it. This one is a Victoria Double Deluxe. That's like two Tweed Deluxes in one amp. And it's very squishy sounding. You know, they're not like super dirty. They're just at the threshold. So if he, you know, plays lighter, they get a little cleaner. Right, exactly. So, and they're all on all the time. We don't switch. We do switch a lot of things, but we don't switch the amps at all. We just bring in like a little boost.
Is there anything specific you do to the amps other than maintenance, or is there anything that you guys have collaborated in that regard?
No, not really. I just maintain them, you know, tubes, whatever repairs need to be done. I mean, I had to put some resistors on the power section of this recently, but generally I don't really work on amps unless, you know, it's something that's obviously broken.
Guitars are safer.
Yeah, I've always just specialized on the instruments. I build guitars, restore old stuff. So, you know, I understand how they work and I keep them working, but I don't really design my own circuits or anything.
Yeah.
So.
And what about speakers? Anything special going on, or is it pretty much stock from the, I guess, yesteryear?
These have been replaced with Jensens. This one here has two 25 watt greenbacks and two vintage 30s. And that just has a couple of Eminence. Red coat, maybe? I think that's a copy of a Vox style speaker.
All right, what do we see here, Dan?
Well, these are the main pedals. You know, you just have a big muff here. This is unusual. It's all made by the Shine company, Japanese fuzz wah, although we don't use the wah part. That's got a real mid-rangey sound. It's a lot different than the big muff. This is a vintage companion fuzz, and the companion fuzz goes into this EQ over here too, so that we can cut some of the lows and bring back some of the mids that are scooped out. It's a very cool octave fuzzy sound, but it kind of scoops the mids out. Even though it gets a lot louder, you know, you have to bring that back into it. You know, just regular tremolo and the Boss super octave with the phaser. Those are together in one loop. That's the tighten up sound at the end. This pedal I used to use as my splitter. It's a great pedal and it does a lot of things, but I used to use it as the splitter when we used only two amps, but it has such a warm boost that I have it in there now just for the boost, so that when we use that, which is something we kick on pretty often, it's not a lot of other boost pedals are, they add a lot of top end to them, and this keeps it kind of pretty transparent sound. Yeah, that's mostly what we're using. I mean, there's a couple of, like, obviously everything's patched into this effect gizmo, and then I have a whole B rig that I'm building. I built this rig myself, so it's still a work in progress. I've only been working on it for, I don't know, a while. Every day I work on it pretty much. But this is just space for building a whole B rig, which it's only started. You know, I have this space allotted in the drawer there, but I have to still go out and get a lot of those pedals. I have some of them, but this drawer down here has all the MIDI stuff on it. because there's a MIDI volume control. And then these Lele boxes, they do the splitting of the signal. That's just a spare extra one there. You can see the tape delay.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a full tone. There's not much to see, really. And it's strapped in there so that it can ride back there all the time. But that's about it, really, for the rig.
All right, so this is what Dan Auerbach's seen on the floor. Talk to us what's going on here.
Okay, this is the pedal board. Like the rack, it's also been a long work in progress. We used to use, you know, a traditional pedal board rig where all the pedals were on the floor instead of up in that rack. And then we had a passive rail of just loops, no power or anything like that. And at one point we just decided the new material needed more fancy switching, and I needed to help switch that stuff because it's just too complicated for Dan to remember lyrics, perform well, play the guitar, you know, sing, push buttons. It's a lot. So the old material, he still pretty much does everything, but a couple songs, I'll help him with some of the cues. And so because of that, we went to this MIDI rig. And this is basically an RJM Mastermind, which is the same unit here. I use this one here. I just keep it in my drawer here, and I stand here and tune and change buttons here because it's patched in remotely to that one, which is out on the stage. But the buttons were too close together for Dan because he's singing and not really looking down there. I had a custom one made of stainless steel by a fabricator in Akron, because I still live in Akron, and there's quite a lot of industry there. If you need something built, you can pretty much get it done there or around that area. And it's all just to make the buttons spaced out a little more. So once the box was built, it was shipped out to Ron Minnelli at RJM, and he made custom electronics to fit inside of it to the design that I gave him, which was pretty much like the Mastermind, only stretched out. And we also wanted to move from your typical boom stand into straight stand, which is a more traditional sort of old school look that Dan's into. And so I made this pedal board. It's just a piece of aluminum. I didn't really make it, but
bought it.
Yeah, I had it cut to the size that I wanted. Because, you know, a lot of times the stage outdoors can be wet or whatever, and it just looks cool. It's all metal. Trying to make more metal in the show.
Never going to have too much metal.
That's right. You should pick this stand up. You'll see what I'm talking about. That sucker's heavy.
Oh, God.
It's an Atlas stand that you might see in a studio or something like that. Anyway, this is a Mission Expression pedal, the EP1. The volume is one thing that we've kept, it's fairly complicated because, well, we didn't get to see it when we were up there. He uses a coiled cable. It's made by Gil Divine Noise Cable, and it goes behind him right to his amplifiers, not down to the pedal board anymore. So he's, because it's coiled and because it goes back behind him, he doesn't have to grab the cable and move it out of his way all the time, or ever anymore. And that keeps the signal path really short because, of course, you know, you don't want to have really long cables. And we used to have very long cable runs, but now we don't. We just have the guitar lead going into the rack, and it's parked right behind the amps, so it comes out of the rack and right into the amplifiers. So the only long cable is the one on his guitar. And that made a complicated situation for the volume. I was looking for a MIDI volume control device, and so I found the Sound Sculpture Volcano, and that's up in the rack there. We probably got a picture of it earlier, but it's just a little box. And this Mission Expression pedal, you know, actuates the volume via MIDI through the RJM Effect Gizmo MIDI signal path. I do have a loop of cables that come out here just for this pedal. This is the only actual pedal that signal is coming out to and back during the show, and it's in one of the loops, so it only comes on when he's using it, and that's for the intro to Lonely Boy. That's the super shifter, and he uses the tremolo arm function.
Why the analog approach with that?
Well, you have to step on the pedal itself to actuate it. You know, there's no remote. Well, it does have an expression pedal jack, but it doesn't work. You'd have to have a pedal. It would be another expression pedal to make that happen. And if you just step on the pedal, it just dips the signal an octave and it comes back up when you release it. It just so much easier to do it that way. That's the way it was designed in the first place. So for that riff, you know, I have a buffered signal. It comes all the way out here to this pedal and all the way back to the rig. And it just comes on when he plays that riff, and then we move on to a cleaner signal path. Just trying to keep all the time available his straight into the amplifier sound, because anything that you put in the path of that, it's not true bypass. Or splitters, usually splitters usually buffer. Although the Lidley devices that we're using, they don't. They're just transformer isolated splitters. So that's it sounds exactly like if you plug just straight into the amp. We have Palmer devices on all the amplifiers that are up there at all. The three that are on Dan's rig, and then we have the smaller PDI-09, I think it is, the little box. That's the one that we use on the keyboard amp, because he plays guitar. That's John Wood. He plays a little bit of guitar on a few songs, and he plays his keyboards through an old Fender Bassman, and it has another Palmer device on it. Then the bass rig, that guy plays guitar. That's everybody plays guitar in this band. So the bass player plays a little guitar because he has a double neck Dan Electro that has guitar and bass, and he loves the bass, and of course the guitar is a big bonus too. So he has a vintage Fender Deluxe Reverb with a Palmer on it and a switching device that goes between it. And then his bass rig, he uses the Palmer bass preamp, DI, which is tubes. It's on his pedal board. They really sound amazing, too. I love those devices.
Speaking of bass, and you mentioned that everyone in the band plays guitar or bass, some type of string instrument. You yourself have even played with the band.
Yeah, I filled in on bass before for a couple shows. When there was a gap in the rhythm section, just in the bass department, the keyboard and bass player that we were using at the time had somehow been double booked, and so I played for a couple shows. Patrick plays bass and guitar too. He's got quite a collection of guitars and stuff too, so everybody really does, actually. That's funny. Something to fill in the gaps of the day, like right now when sound check is done and dinner is on. We have ping pong, and we have air hockey, and they get beat up a little bit riding in the truck, so Nick is here trying to get the air hockey table running again. The other day the legs fell off. It's tough life for something that's not ready to tour.
Well, let's go to the guitars, which are near and dear to your heart, because you've, I'm sure, worked on, if not all of them, some of them.
I have every one of them. Some of them quite a bit. They're all good, but I'll save the best one for last, which is Dan's favorite currently. So, it depends on where you start, I guess, on which would be the best. But this is probably the one that most people are going to be most familiar with. It's a Harmony H78, and he's been playing this for several years. Maybe 5 years or something. This is what he still uses when they do, in the middle of the set, they do a few songs as just a two-piece again. Even though they have a bass player and keyboard player that are playing with them now, they walk off for four songs or more. And he plays this guitar because it has a very distinctive sound, because it's totally hollow, and it has these kicking pickups in it. I've seen a lot of guitars that have this model of DeArmond's in it, but this one in particular sounds amazing.
What models are these, just to be clarified?
I don't know what model they actually are. They're usually referred to as gold foils, because they came in so many different guitars. But it has three switches, one for each, and volume and tone for each. Although we never really use anything but the bridge pickup.
And before we go any further, you should fill us in and, your story with not only these guitars, but guitars in general. You have your own shop in Akron.
Yeah, well, working on guitars in my shop has really been the biggest portion of my career of working on, in the industry, I would say. I worked in a shop before I actually owned one of my own. I started when I was 20. And, that was 20-some years ago. So I did that for a while, and then around 98, I started working with Judas Priest. And I toured with them for a few years and had a big break in the middle of it. So I had saved up enough money that I could open my own shop. And it was great. I had maybe a year or more off from the touring with them. they were just taking a break, so it was good timing to start a business. And in wandered Dan, and that was, like I said, around 98, and he was a teenager still. He was probably 18 or 19 years old, and came in with his first guitar.
Which was a?
It was like a Tysco, or a Tysco copy. It was it had a different paint job on it, I think. And I changed a couple things. I think I put a bridge on it or something that would keep it in tune or whatever. But it was a gift from his mom, which was very sweet. But he, anyway, he's always collected guitars, so he's had quite a lot of different ones over the years. But this one, he's had in his operation for some time. And he bought it from one of my helpers at the guitar shop in Akron. Had a guy helping me for a while that had this thing, and it needed a little bit of work, and he wasn't working on it because we had other things to work on at the time. And then Dan came in one day and saw it and said, "Ooh, how much for that one?" So the next time he came in, I think he didn't buy it that day. The next time he came in, it was ready for him. I said, "Get that thing ready, he might buy it," and he sure did. So he's been playing that for quite a while. The next one chronologically would be this one. This is another Harmony Stratotone, and it's obviously had a lot of work done to it too. It has different tuning keys. I made a new nut for it. Dan's dad deals antiques, and one of his cohorts or accomplices in the antique business gave Dan this guitar, but it didn't have any parts at all. It didn't have any tuners, no pick guard, no pickups or Bigsby or anything. I think it had that switch. Anyway, he said, "I want to make this work." And so I got a set of Lindy Fralin pickups and this old Bigsby I think I had in my shop already. And I made that pick guard. And I was able to figure out, well, it was pretty obvious. When you take the pick guard off, it's bright red underneath there. Because this awesome two-tone burst used to be a three-tone burst. Like many from about maybe 62 or whatever this is from. That era, red on many sunbursts just dissipates. It just comes out, and it just disappears. Like a three-tone Stratocaster a lot of times becomes, and over the time. Anyway, so I just copied the image and made a pickguard to fit it. Put these Fralins in, the Bigsby on. Nothing really fancy. Those are just a set of Godos on the back. Yeah, see how red it is on the back compared to the front? It must have sat in a window or something. It looks like it sat in a pawn shop window for a long time or a secondhand store or something. Anyway, he plays this one in open G tuning.
What songs is he playing that one?
For right now, he's only playing it on one song, and it's on a song called Run Right Back, which is on their new record. Although he recorded a few of the other songs in that tuning, he's transposed them to standard just for ease, but this one particular song has that powerful open D on the bass string, and has to be in that tuning to make it, to be effective. It's heavy duty. It's got a pretty heavy duty sound too, because those are P90s, you know, they just crunch like they should.
What strings is he using on all these guitars? Are they different, or is it pretty much set throughout all five?
First of all, because we're from Akron and we love Akron things, we use SIT strings.
Oh, all right.
Because I have a long relationship with SIT Company because the guy that started that company happened to own the guitar shop where I started my guitar fixing career. And I still use those strings in my shop, and Dan's always used them. They're quality strings. And he pretty much sticks with 11 to 50 gauge on most of the guitars. And all the other ones are in standard tuning. And that gauge still works for this one, even though it's in the drop tuning. This guitar, though, we're skipping a couple, but this is the one that is his current favorite. It's a 64 Guild Thunderbird.
It's got like a Bo Diddley type look to it.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Because you don't see too many people through history of rock and roll guitars playing this model for some reason.
No.
And I don't know why, because it's awesome. It's got a amazing headstock shape. It's just not symmetrical, and I don't believe it's on any other Guild model either.
Is there anything particular you did to get this one up and running, or did this one come with all the parts necessary?
I did have to do some work to it, but it's largely original. I mean, of course, I did a setup. I did some fret work. I, carved the saddle notches and stuff like that to fine-tune it. This bridge pickup didn't work, and we got it either, so we had to have some coils made for it. Liddy Kralin, again, made some coils for it, custom, to make it like the neck pickup. And Dan bought this shortly before we did Saturday Night Live last December. In fact, very shortly. So he came in and he's like, I need this guitar to work. And it was a bit of a process. You would see this bridge and tremolo arrangement on a Hagstrom from the mid to late 60s, too. I'm not sure who made them. Maybe Burns or something like that. It's a great tremolo. It stays in tune great. Dan uses the tremolo a lot, but he only uses it very gently or fast, but still gentle. He doesn't ever try and get crazy with it. Right, because that just doesn't work. I don't care how good your guitar is set up. Unless it has a Floyd Rose on it, it's going to go out of tune if you do that. Most amazing, weird feature is that it has a stand built into the back. I have a piece of tape on here. It has a magnet, too, to keep it from coming up, but it doesn't work that great.
And patent pending, even.
Oh, yeah. You'd be kind of kissing this part of it goodbye if you were to try and use that stand, I think. But anyway, we don't use that because I have this other fancier stand up here that holds all the guitars. We have a few other guitars other than these out here just for twanging on in the dressing room or whatever, but these are the stage guitars. And, you know, he has a lot of guitars in his studio. So, you know, what he records with and what he plays live with are rarely ever the same.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have this Supro. Now, I have to admit, there were so many different models of these model names. I don't remember what this one and this black one here's names are offhand. But I'm very familiar with them. I've had several of them myself. Well, this is a Supro, and that's a National, but they're the same, pretty much the same guitar, really. They just, the shape is different. It's a fiberglass body, bolted together there, and that's a gasket. And of course, you know what that is.
Yep.
Just about every guitar has to have some means to make it go. This has a very interesting bridge pickup, too. There's a piezo pickup and some coils inside the base of that bridge.
Is it usable?
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting sound. It kind of sounds like an acoustic guitar, but not really. You know, I mean, not compared to modern standards.
Yeah.
Although it sounds more like it than that does.
Yeah.
These are just the typical National hot single coils. They really crunch. There's lots of knobs. Everybody likes that. The thing about it, though, is that I've done quite a lot of work to this. I had to refret it and adjust the bridge and secure it, too, so that it would stay in tune. But this has a truss rod in it, but it's the old box style, like an old Martin would have.
Okay.
It's not adjustable. And unfortunately, on a rock and roll guitar, to have good action that's playable and clear, you have to be able to really fine-tune that. And the only way to do that is not in the field, in the shop.
Yeah.
Because you have to rig it up with the right amount of bow, and then you have to test, take the strings on and off, like, 20 times or whatever to get it right.
Awesome.
Yeah, fine-tune it until you get it right, and then you can finally polish and recrown the frets and finish the job off. But it's a little bit of a process. But, you know, it's super stable. I did that probably 3 years ago, and it hasn't needed anything since then, really.
And where's the Supro being seen on stage this set, tour?
Mostly for the Brothers. Anything from Brothers. Not every song from Brothers, but... you know, like Tighten Up and She's Long Gone. A couple of the other ones, too. This guitar is the Howlin' for You guitar. And like I was saying a minute ago, it's basically the same guitar as the Supro. It's just a National instead. It's different inlays. It's the same neck, same non-adjustable neck. So I had a lot of time into fixing that one up. Same pickups, same funky bridge pickup. Does have this really cool tremolo, though. That's pretty unique. A stainless steel arm. There's a really interesting spring system under there, too. And, of course, you can select any of the pickups that you like to appear. Lots of knobs, again. Same plastic, fiberglass construction, too. So it gives it that sort of hollow guitar sound. Mm-hmm. Like the harmony, the first harmony that we were looking at, it's totally hollow, and that's a big part of the sound that Dan gets when he's playing, especially the two-piece mm-hmm. stuff. When it's just him and Patrick on stage, you know, feedback is a big part of the show.
Yeah.
Because he's playing really loud, and he's got the big muff on, and it's, you know, exploding.
I was going to ask, is there anything, like most camps, they have like an NS2, they with a noise suppressor, try to squelch some of that. With you guys, do you guys welcome it? Is it?
We don't use any noise suppressors. The noise suppressor is the amps facing about 45 degrees off to the left. Because if they were facing right at him, it would just be out of control.
Yeah. I can't forget the El Camino-inspired guitar case, can we?
No, this is the trunk made by R&R that we ride the guitars all in. Oh, at least Dan's guitars are right in there. That's my pedal board on top, of course. But we had it made in white. And then our stage manager, Nick Close, had this brilliant idea to get some Woody panel sticker paper from the Chrysler parts department, I think. Yeah, so we trimmed it and put it on there to make it look like the van on the cover.
All right, Dan, final question of the rig equation, which is always the pick. So what's Dan's favorite choice right now?
Yellow Tortex, turned black and printed. It's actually the old Yellow Tortex picks. We had them made, of course, in black, and they have the Black Keys logo from the kick drum. That's actually Patrick's artwork right there, because Patrick traditionally has always done the kick drum with a Sharpie. And we took a close-up and sent it to the company, and they put that image on the picks, which is pretty cool. Keyboard picks and bass picks, and Patrick has his own picks, too. They say, head of the drum percussion department or something like that on them.
That's perfect. Well, thank you very much, Dan. Thanks, this is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar, and that's the Arctic Monkey sound checking.